Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the September 24 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists today include Dale Durkles of AgriVisor Services, LLC, out of Bloomington, Illinois. Also from Bloomington, Illinois, Aaron Curtis of Midco. And from Champaign, Illinois, Stuart Peterson's Jackie Vakes.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
Let's start with an item that I believe to be factual. Most corn and soybean sales are made across the scale in the United States. Is this true, Aaron Curtis of Midco? And if that is the case, for this year, is it the right thing to do?
Well, I think it's changed here the last couple of years. I mean, the last 2 years, we've seen the producer more of a storer of corn and more of an active seller of soybeans across the scale the last couple of years. And the farmer has been a much more inconsistent seller of corn throughout the year. We went into this summer with a larger share of old crop corn we've had in a long time, just because the farmer was pretty reluctant seller after coming off some of these very high prices we've seen over the last few years, and just kind of sitting there waiting for, you know, some sort of a rally. And, you know, we did see the rally there at the middle of July based off the wet weather, and we did see some old crop stuff moved, but, you know, a lot of that stuff had been carried all the way through fall and the winter into the summer months, a bigger percentage that we've seen. And, you know, we had a large share of old crop corn that got carried into this new fall, you know, based on what we've seen in the past anyway, just to, due to the fact the producer has not liked the price at this point. But, you know, overall, what we've seen so far, especially in Illinois, Todd, is that the producer has been a very reluctant seller of both corn and soybeans. You know, $4 corn and $9 beans are kind of the goal right now, and, you know, we're well below that, at least at the cash level at the elevator. So we've seen a lot of corn and soybeans just going straight into storage this fall. We'll see if that continues. You know, bean yields continue to be pretty good, if not impressive, in some of these early beans. We'll see if the producer still wants to hang on to beans or not as we move forward. But for the most part, just in a little bit of harvest that we've had done so far, producer just hasn't had a lot of interest in selling anything, Todd.
But will they be forced to? I mean, are they willing to store in your elevator for longer periods?
Well, I mean, it's a personal decision, right? But, you know, there's some money needs for some producers. But for the most part, I think...
Well, I mean, but they come across the scale and they say, well, not today. But you're going to tell them, what, within a few days they need to sell, right?
They have to make a decision, right? And at this point, the decisions that are being made are majority being stored as opposed to sell at this point.
Mm-hmm.
We are not buying much grain across the scale at this point, Todd.
Yeah. Well, I think that makes sense. You know, when you look at the estimates for the September quarterly grain stocks for next week, you know, they're already saying that they think the farmer's going to have 12.2% corn compared to 8.9% that they were holding last year, and they're saying for beans 5.2% compared to 2.7. So, you know, that would go right to what you're talking about, Aaron. They just have been reluctant sellers, and it looks like, you know, if it comes out at these numbers, it's going to confirm that.
Yeah, are you hearing something different than that, Todd?
No, I'm not, but I'm just thinking that historically, when you look at the numbers as to when producers market their crop, these are pretty good months, simply because a lot of producers bring it across the scale and sell it. And I know they have built a lot of bins. There's a lot of corn that's already in storage. There was a whole lot of thought that that would not come into the elevator system. And I'm just wondering what they're going to do with it at this point. And soybeans, generally speaking, kind of roll across the scale or have. and been sold anyway. And maybe I'm just wrong, but I thought historically that's where we had been, and I was double-checking with you.
You are right in that sense, Todd, that I think the number is somewhere around 60% of the grain gets sold or moved across, you know, priced as it moves across the scale. But this year, and I think Aaron identified things right, you know, last year they were stubborn selling because we'd come off of high-priced years. So far this year, it seems like they're the same. But the key ingredient here is that they've adjusted their targets down somewhat. He mentioned $4 corn, $9 beans. And, you know, when you look at those, depending on the elevator I'm in and what their storage charges are, you know, I can still go ahead and store them for the short term. And arguably, if those are my targets and I think if I think as a farmer they're viable, I can potentially make money storing it. Secondarily, along with that, we have capacity to store it. You'll have some localized problems, don't get me wrong, but the problems we've had with corn here in Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, are going to cut back the supply a little bit. And if there's any place when you break down and look at the numbers state by state, you have to get up into the Dakotas where you're going to have a little bit more issue with storage capacity being a problem. So we have the storage capacity to handle it here, too. And so I think there's going to be a reluctance to really chase it down. And I think if they are inclined to sell anything, maybe a little bit more willingly, it's going to be beans versus corn. Because in beans, when you look at your cash bid structure, because of where we're at in the futures, you're basically flat when you look at your forward bid numbers.
Yep.
But with corn, you got to carry in the market. And so the market's actually telling you, you know, if you have the wherewithal to put it in the bin. So I think they're going to be more inclined to maybe sell beans rather than corn. And, you know, everybody out there has preached to all these people, we've got this surplus of beans. If South America has another big crop, you know, there's just much more fear out there in the bean markets than corn.
Aaron, I want to follow up with you again just a little bit. Have you been busy there at the elevator yet?
Well, you know, just to remind folks, we're not in the elevator. We're in the corporate setting here in Bloomington. But our grain elevators that we deal with throughout the state, you know, if you go from this kind of central part of the state, Jacksonville, over to Champaign, they've been, you know, pretty steady to busy. You get southern Illinois a little less so, and then you get north of Bloomington, and things are just kind of getting started. We've turned to a lot of beans here this week, rightfully so, with the weather the way it is. So we've seen a lot of, you know, a couple pretty good bean days here. We got some elevators that, you know, are approaching, you know, 30-40% done on corn, which is a pretty good pace for September 24th. But if you look at the weather forecast, Todd, and you look at this, providing we don't have any surprise showers here the next week to 10 days, there's going to be a lot of corn and soybeans out of the way here. And there's going to, you know, you get into that first or second week in October, and boy, there's going to be a lot of clean fields here moving forward. And, you know, Dale touched on an interesting point there. Unless the corn crop is wet, and which we really haven't seen a very wet year really since 2009, because of the structure that has been changed, not only with the producer adding storage capacity, but the elevator has also done that over the last 5 years, it's really hard to find too much of any line anymore. Everything tends to move pretty quickly through the pipeline, and that was really exemplified last year when we went into what we thought was going to be a transportation nightmare with the big crop, the record crop that we had going. And for the most part, you know, if you talk to an elevator manager, they would say that harvest went better than expected last year. So I think some of the infrastructure changes that we have seen over the last few years were really put into spotlight last year, and this year so far, it'd be hard pressed to find, at least in this part of the country, any elevators that are backed up that much right now, because this corn is coming out pretty dry. Soybeans are dry too, so these things just continue to move through the pipeline pretty quickly, Todd.
I think that's where I was trying to head when I asked if you were busy, because I was wondering, and maybe you're telling me a little different story, because I think producers are looking at it saying, hey, there's not a line at the elevator. Why is that? Everybody must be storing, or this crop isn't as good as we think it is. And you're saying, no, the capacity has been built to dump faster probably, and not, and storage is available and it's all being put away very quickly.
And the other thing that goes with that, Todd, and Aaron mentioned it, the crop's dry. I don't have to process it. I don't have to dry it. So you don't have any backlog in the system in the east.
It's really good. The only backlog there is in the west, and the only reason they have a backlog there is because the elevators are so full of wheat that, you know, the corn crop's coming on earlier than they thought it was going to, and things aren't moving quite as quick as they'd like to see them. There they've got a lot of lines, but, you know, the dryness is a gift from God. There's no question about that, because this would be a mess. It would really be wet. Hey, Aaron, I want to go back. You know, you alluded to the transportation issues we had last year. Are you saying we have no transportation issues this year?
No, I'm not saying that. I just think that if you looked at where we went into last year when we had barge freight trading over 1,000%, we had, you know, rail freight that, especially out west, that was sky high, and that quickly, those markets quickly recovered once we realized that we were going to be able to put away this crop a little easier than we thought. Of course, we had some weather that cooperated last year. We had some few wet spells in there to help alleviate a little bit of the pipeline. But transportation is moving, a little better right now. You know, barge freight, not too far off of, you know, some of the average levels we see for this time of year. You know, so mm-hmm. far rail freight continues to move along okay. Now, we're always going to have truck issues right this time of year. So, you know, that's nothing new. But, you know, so far through this harvest, now, like I said, we still got a long way to go. But so far, transportation, at least from what we're seeing in Illinois, is not causing a big cause for concern, at least for the elevator system.
Yeah. Well, I wonder what the selling situation would have been like last year had we not had the transportation problems and more or less almost a forced-to-sell situation at the elevator at times. You know, it might have really been bad.
No, right.
Well, when you go back and you look at the situation a year ago, and one of the guys in Aaron's office looked at it, and he looked at the supplies, and he was just looking at the three major grains, corn, wheat, and beans, and broke it down on a state-by-state basis. And even a year ago, as you looked at it, we didn't have any huge storage issues last year. And so the transportation issues were kind of muted because of that, because especially where we had some extremely depressed prices, farmers just said, I'm storing it, you know, I don't have to sell it, I'm not going to. And so it really mitigated a lot of the problems that everybody feared last year. Now this year, because, you know, you've got good crops again out west, you know, you're going to have some identifiable problems up in the Dakotas. And, you know, once we get into those harvests in a big way, corn in particular, you know, we could see some things occur. But even they, you know, crops are maturing a little bit fast. So, you know, it may spread to harvest enough that we never really see an issue. And certainly as far as transportation out there in particular, you know, we have rail cars and we have motive power this year.
Next week, USDA will release the grain stocks numbers, the final quarterly report for the last, for the current year, which ends on the 30th of September, or ended on the 31st of August. What will it show, do you suppose, Jackie?
Well, I think it's going to show pretty much what they're expecting, and that is that the farmer has been a reluctant seller, that he's, you know, that he's sitting on stocks that are bigger than they were a year ago, but that's to be expected. I still think the bottom line comes down to, you know, it's been a real fireworks report over the last number of years. And, you know, the question that I have in my mind, and I think everybody does, is that, you know, we're doing a lot of early harvesting. So may there be new crop corn that goes in place of old crop corn, and how is it reported? That's always the question we have. And I think that they've cleaned a lot of that up, but it may become it may not be as big a report this year. I mean, they're expecting some pretty large numbers. I think in general, we're going to have to deviate a long ways off of it to get any kind of huge move in the marketplace. And in light of the fact that we're heavy into harvest and that we've had the good weather, you know, it doesn't look like we're going to have weather delays or anything else that might spark a lot of trade. It may come and it may go and not be a whole lot.
You know, the one issue when you look at next week's reports, and you know, you never know about a grain stocks report, and we learned that the last 2 to 3 years, that's for sure, any of them. But when you look at the bean numbers and you start really penciling down a kind of demand structure you have, I'm thinking it's going to be somewhere a little less than 200 million. You know, admittedly, it's not big. And for beans, it probably doesn't matter much because of the crop or the perception of the crop we're harvesting here and, you know, going to have a more comfortable structure this year. So it's not as important as it was. But in corn, it is, you know, and everybody pretty much realizes and admits, you know, last year's bean crop was overestimated. And I think there's some reason to wonder, was last year's corn crop overestimated too? We'll never get a revision on that until they do their revisions every 5 years. But when you look at the pattern of the feed and residual consumption, and that last word is important, residual. When you look at the feed and residual pattern through the quarters this year, they've continually said, you know, we're undercounting that a little bit. And even as I started to look at the data for this report, I came back to that same conclusion again. And I wouldn't be surprised that the corn number isn't somewhere under 1.7 billion, maybe 50, 75 under where the USDA is today. But when you're working in an environment in corn, for example, that you know, with the acreage, with the production potential we have for the new crop, we're going to tighten up next year's S&D. If we follow that up in October with a yield number that's a little bit lower, and I would argue that is certainly a possibility, we start looking at a carryout that for the new crop that may be somewhere closer to, let's say, $1.4 billion, and that argues price paid to farmers ought to be 4.25 or higher. So, you know, it really begs the question, why are we trading December corn under a $4 bill?
And why are we?
Because people have the perception there isn't a reason to be concerned at this point in time. But if we get the stocks that are a little smaller, if we get a production number next week that's a little smaller, quickly you can shift that structure a little bit. And it doesn't take much shift in the structure at this point, because with corn, and we don't have that perception that we're really working with a somewhat delicate balance between maybe having plenty to where, well, we're starting to tighten this up a little bit too much. We're really just sitting on the edge of a knife right here.
Are you all of the opinion that producers, and who obviously are storing both corn and soybeans, should store them?
Okay, well,
yeah, and let me give you a time frame. So let's say that they don't need cash flow prior to the new year. So we're gonna store at least through January.
Well, I think it all comes down to what minimum storage price is, you know, and just, you know, most guys are probably not going to take income, you know, until after the new year to begin with. But I think in general, corn, yes, I agree. You know, Aaron was talking about the fact that there's carry in the market, and it does say to you that you know, it's not great carry. It's not huge. I mean, from December to May, you're looking at 19 cents. That's not gigantic carry, but it's still carry in the market. And so there's an opportunity there. I think we have this report next week, and we have the October report like Dale was talking about. Those are two opportunities where we could see a bounce, and then we'll see once if the funds come in like they did last year, if the funds decide that they want to own grain and continue to stay long, we could probably move the market higher. So I think there's opportunity, but it just depends upon, you know, do they have their basis locked? Are they following basis? There's so many questions that you have to answer before you make that decision. And, you know, I guess the in charge and the minimum storage charge would be the thing I'd be looking at versus can I capture that against the carry in the market.
And can you, Aaron?
Yeah, I think overall, Todd, if all things are equal, you know, if you don't need cash needs and those kind of things, I think there's some opportunity for some better prices if that's what we're kind of getting to at the bottom line here. I think short term, you know, we've been pretty range bound, pretty sideways. I think that continues for a while until we get a better handle on exactly how big a crop is out there. I guess the larger bean yields, for the most part, that we're hearing early here, maybe concerns me a little bit about the upside on beans, at least in the short term. But I think, you know, at some point after we get through the first year into the next spring, I think we're going to see, you know, some better prices that would probably cover, for the most part, you know, your minimums moving out that way, Todd.
And Dale?
I think Aaron's right. You know, I think we rally enough to cover your minimums on both corn and beans. The only thing I'd really have to add, you know, simply because you do have this specter of doubt in the beans with the South American question mark and how much can a market move if they would have a big crop. You know, I think corn's an easier item to store, to recoup the storage cost itself than maybe beans are. That's really the only difference. But I see the overall structure for bean demand still being real solid. And, you know, if I don't need money for either, it'll probably still make money to put them into storage and hang on. But there is more risk with beans and corn, I think.
Hey, Aaron, I got a question for you. You know, my opinion, because of the difference in the size of the crop from the west to the west to the east, you know, and the different scenario that we're looking at, is that basis will have to probably do a great deal of the work to be able to get the grain in. So do you think that basis will limit how much we can go up on the futures? In other words, do you think that a strong move in basis, if we prove to be just continue to be range bound in corn, will be the way that it plays out in the country to get stuff to move?
Well, it sure tried that last year, Jackie, and didn't have a whole lot of luck. I think we still have a majority of producers are flat price traders, and you know they want $4, and they're going to kind of wait until until that price point is hit. I think you know we've already seen, you know, at least in, you know, central Illinois anyway, you know, some basis levels that are, you know, better than what we've seen, you know, traditionally when you're talking about possibly the third highest crop we've ever seen in our history, right? So, and a lot of that function is just the lack of consistent producer movement. There's just not much moving right now, and basis has to do a little bit of the work. But I think it's going to be interesting, back to your point, is how basis works on that. You can almost take a line right down through the center of the Corn Belt, diagonal maybe, and you're going to see some interesting basis relationships between what happens in Indiana and Ohio, which is probably the epicenter of the struggle, right? And how those markets continue to try to feed the Southeast, and what that means for Eastern Illinois basis versus even the western side of Illinois into the West, where it looks like the crop's a little bit bigger and going to be more comfortable. So I think you're going to see an interesting dynamic here as basis, and how does Illinois play into both sides of that? And you could see a little bit of a struggle between the two sides, how they play that. Because, you know, if you look back, you know, there's been years, especially in 2012, when we saw some of that corn from Minnesota when they had very good crops try to work its way, you know, a little farther east and farther south. And it'll be interesting to see if that situation would happen, if things get a little tighter around some of those areas that, you know, are going to have some production issues versus what they, you know, are normally used to expecting. So there's going to be a lot of interesting transportation basis plays, I think, as the year moves on, Jackie.
Do they need to, farmers that is, Dale, to look at basis now and to lock in anything, or basis levels at a point where they're tight enough that it might pay them, if they're going to store, to go ahead and do that?
You know, I'm not opposed to really tying up basis on this stuff at this point in time. If we're really coming somewhere in close to a bottom, and cyclically, you know, we're right in a window for beans to put a bottom in here sometime in the next couple of weeks, and it looks like we're getting in that window. And I think, you know, with the weather and the harvest activity, if we're going to find a break, it's going to be here and now. So, you know, tying up the basis at low prices are good, because if we do turn the game up and let's say we even have a 50, 70 cent rally, you know, you're not going to find the cash go with that, especially as we get back up and start seeing some $9 bids. You're going to see basis get a little sloppier once again. But I think our demand base here during the fall and the winter is still going to be relatively robust. Not like last year, but it's still going to be robust. And in corn, it's going to be a matter, you know, I don't know that, you know, tying up the basis is a mistake there either, especially when you look at the carry in the market, because, you know, until we start getting to a point where you take away that reason for people to store it, and basis is part of that game, you know, the basis is probably going to go ahead and firm. So if I'm anticipating some sales, even for post after first of the year, you know, I think tying up the basis on it down here is a pretty smart move right now.
I thought it was interesting on the last USDA report that we saw them raise imports by 5 million bushels on corn. And then this week, you know, we heard that there was a cargo coming in to the East Coast again. And how likely do you think that it is that that's going to really, really play? I'm concerned, I guess, because we have the presidential election in Argentina. And, you know, everybody who's running down there is saying that they're going to lower the export tax on grains. And if they truly do, you know, these guys have been sitting on a bootload of beans and corn just waiting for this to happen. And it's in October. So, you know, October, it wouldn't be good timing for us. Let's just put it that way. And so, Aaron, what are you hearing? Are you thinking that exports are imports from South America are really going to play into this?
You know, I guess not at this point yet, Jackie. I think it's something to watch. Maybe, you know, it's always an interesting thing to watch, you know, late in the summer when supplies are somewhat limited. I think, it wasn't too long ago that we were already hearing some stuff, you know, out of South America into the Southeast for, you know, Dec-Jan time frame. You know, the big crop mm-hmm. down there, at least in Brazil, big, large second crop's going to have a long tail to it. So probably to reiterate your point, it's probably a little concern. Now, is it, you know, how feasible is it? You know, I guess at this point, I don't know for sure. It's probably going to largely depend, too, on exactly how big the Indiana-Ohio crops are. Are we overstating them? Are we understating them at this point? You know, how quickly does the farmer move some of this grain this fall? Are they going to be tempted to sell anything? Or right now, we don't think so, but, you know, those things can change. So, you know, a lot of moving parts, but obviously it's something that has to continue to be, you know, in the back of your mind anyway, that, you know, if there's an opportunity to move some stuff up here at cheaper values, I'm sure there'll be some people looking at it.
On that note, Dale, I want to know from you whether you've looked at some of the FSA acreage figures. I'm a little confused on myself on this as to whether those FSA numbers are telling us that USDA is likely to change in their WASD figures in the crop production numbers for October, acreage for soybeans in particular, and if the trade has already gotten a number that's different enough built into the marketplace.
Well, you know, I think the trade, and there's good validation when you look at the data from the FSA, and I even argued this back in August based on the prevent plant numbers that, you know, the total acreage package for stuff was still too high. Nobody got excited about the prevent plant numbers in August, even though they came in about 2 million acres more than everybody thought they should have been.
Yeah.
Right. But when you look at the planting numbers in September, and assuming, you know, we're about on track with typical data entry, and this year there's reason to think, well, they should be better off than they were a year ago. We don't have that argument to hide behind. The Informa numbers that were out in the trade here the end of last week or the first of this week, thinking about 400,000 acres or 500,000 acres down in corn, I think it was, and 1.4 million in beans, I think are reasonable numbers to think about now. I don't expect they'll all come in the month of October, though, simply because that data set at FSA isn't complete. So the NAS guys that put together crop reports aren't likely to go the full 9 yards, you know, to go ahead and build it all into the mix. But I would say we could see something here at this point that, 600,000, 750,000 acres down in beans, and, you know, in corn, I wouldn't be surprised to see 250,000 or something like that down, but I expect we could see more in January again. So, you know, we'll see some adjustment, no doubt about it. You know, it's pretty obvious at this point, you know, the NAS numbers are too high. That's without question. You know, then we're just trying to play a game at this point. How much do they go in the month of October? Because they'll leave themselves some room, I think, to further clarify it once we're at the end of the growing season and they see a more complete FSA set of data at the end of the year in January than what we're dealing with here today. But I think there's going to be a fairly significant shift. But, you know, you have to put this in perspective, and the beans in particular, the one that people are more interested in, it seems like. You know, if I go 500,000 acres in beans, that's like 22, 23 million bushel.
Mm-hmm.
If I go a bushel in yield, that's worth 80 million. You know, and the yield is really more important in the beans at this point in time than the acreage mix as far as looking at that new crop. And, you know, I still have questions, even though our early bean yields have been very good. I've postulated, I think the later harvested beans may be the ones that end up being a little disappointing this year.
I think the USDA will give themselves lots of room, you know.
They have to.
Yeah, they do.
Because they're working with two different data sets, and you know, they have to have faith in what their survey procedures tell them. And, you know, what we're really looking at here and the difference between the two numbers is really, you know, how many acres were raised outside of the farm program, and that's what a lot of people don't understand. You know, that's kind of a
right.
fluid number in itself, too, but... You know, the bean number in itself, you know, it's clear it's too high. You know, I've said a million is what I would peg it at. You know, Inform is at 1.4 million. I can't argue with them. And I can't argue with their number on corn. In Missouri alone, we had prevent plant numbers on corn of it was over 500,000, but less than 600,000
yep.
acres.
Yeah.
That hasn't shown anywhere because that hasn't been resurveyed for. So how do we make that adjustment? So, I mean, you know, you've got some questions in the mix. Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, you know, you've got some prevent plant acres on beans that never showed up, even a few on corn. So there are some numbers in the whole mix that said they're going to go down or likely to go down. You know, it's really how much and how fast will they make that adjustment. But they won't go the full extent in October, but they'll go down, I think.
Time for our final word. We'll start with you, Jackie Vakes of Stewart Peterson.
Aaron, you made a point the other before. You know, these guys are flat price sellers, and they're looking at $4 corn and $9 beans. I just don't want to see them end up like the flat price 160 cattle sellers that are looking at the 130s right now. You know, I mean, it's amazing because they weren't afraid at all, and they didn't sell, and they didn't sell, and they didn't sell. And I don't think what's going on in cattle is necessarily reflective of fundamentals, but it does say one thing. If you get fear going, you could see a big change in their idea as to whether or not they want to sell. So for all of our listeners, please have a safe harvest, and thank you, guys. Great talking with you.
Aaron Curtis from Midco.
Well, like I said, I don't think we see much in the futures market, at least in the short term, Todd. I think we continue to kind of be bored to death here, at least. It's been pretty quiet, at least on this end of the phone anyway. Like I said, the farmer hasn't done much, so I think that continues here. I think we can continue to grind kind of sideways here for a while, barring any surprises next Wednesday or in the October crop report, but I think we can. Like I said, sideways trade is going to be what we talk about a lot. And like Jackie said, I wish everybody a safe harvest. Continued, hopefully we hear more stories of better than expected yield tests as we continue to get through it, Todd.
And Dale Durkles.
You know, the one thing that's really kind of interesting, this is the cynic in me speaking. There was a news story at the end of last week or this week talking about Harvard University and their endowment portfolio and how they were getting out of the commodity mix. And I found that really kind of interesting, kind of like throwing in the towel, you know, the last bull said, I'm walking away. You know, and meanwhile, you know, we're still in this window for commodity prices in general to put in three-year lows. We're finding these indices have some support at the current levels at this point, and there's a reason to think that from a lot of directions. So I still think, you know, the commodity market going forward is going to be somewhat better as we move through 2015 and on into 2016 for reasons we probably can't really define at this juncture yet. So I'm still a general bull as far as commodities. You know, and lastly, yeah, have a safe harvest out there. But the thing I've seen most of in terms of problems this year is combine fires. You know, keep them cleaned out, guys. It's a real problem, it seems like, this year, especially in Illinois East.
Dale Durkles is with AgriVisor LLC out of Bloomington, Illinois. Aaron Curtis joined us as well. He's also in Bloomington at Midco. And Jackie Vakes is with Stewart Peterson from right here in Champaign County. You've been listening to the September 24 edition of Commodity Week. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Don't forget to visit our website and have a safe harvest season. The address for the site is willag.org.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at agrigold.com.